This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and we'll begin today with some dramatic numbers on the gap between what men and women earn in Greater Boston. The study comes from the Boston Women's Workforce Council and City Hall, and it finds that on average, working women make 23% less than men, 77 cents on the dollar. Here are some more numbers from the study of 112,000 workers from 69 companies. The average salary for women, just under $79,000 a year. Men make more than $103,000. Men also make more than twice as much in bonuses as women do, according to this study. That there's a gender wage gap isn't news, but this is the first time researchers have used data collected directly from employers rather than from employees. So this study is considered very accurate compared to previous studies. At City Hall today, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh characterized the new report as a call to action.
In 2017, it's time for us to stop talking and start to take action in closing the wage gap. And I think this report moves us more confidently in that direction.
So, as it is across the country, the gender wage gap is alive and well in Greater Boston. Joining us now for some context and insight is Megan Costello. She's the executive director in the Mayor's Office of Women's Advancement. She joins us now from City Hall. And Megan, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Anthony.
And here in the studio is Victoria Budson. She's founder and the executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And Victoria, welcome to you. Good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. Nice to be here.
And Megan, let me start with you. Before the study, it was thought that Boston was doing a bit better than the national average. That estimate had women making about 83 cents for every dollar a man makes. This report shows a much larger wage gap. Is this a sobering report in your view?
Yeah, so Anthony, I think what's so exciting about today's report is really that this is the first time in our nation's history that we have actual wage data. The gender wage gap has been based on census data for a long time. It's been based on what employees give to the government. This is the first time that we're actually seeing employers give us data. And we have been able to anonymize and aggregate that data to understand the overall average, which is 77 cents. And so I don't think that this is necessarily new information. We know that the gender wage gap has existed for a long time. But we actually are now working with real evidence-based knowledge that's going to allow us to move forward.
Yeah. So this looked at 112,000 employees from 69 companies that participated voluntarily. How representative do you think these companies are of the total employment situation?
Sure. So our report actually does compare to the EEOC data of Greater Boston. And so it does give us a sample of understanding, who these people are. Our sample, though, is a little bit higher when it comes to the number of women we have in our sample and also the number of women of color in leadership positions. And so we know it's not an exact science, but we do know that this is pretty representative based on real wage data.
Right. Now, Victoria Budson, I'd like to come to you. A 23% wage gap. What strikes you about this report?
You know, there's a number of pieces that are really important about what we've just learned. The first is this is 11% of the Greater Boston market of employees, which is a pretty large amount of data for us to have. And it also represents $11 billion in terms of companies here. Now, this gives us for the first time a baseline that we can measure against. 179 different companies have signed the compact. And as Megan talked about, 69 provided data that was used in this report. If you imagine what can move forward from here, where perhaps the next year or the year after, when this report is repeated and we have more data, that we could end up perhaps with a sample that could be as large as 20%. Mm. So as important as what we learned today is, the most important thing is that this gives us a marker by which to compare against into the future.
Mm. And as we move forward, it would be more and more important for more and more companies to willingly participate in this compact. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And many of you will recall that the pay equity bill passed here in Massachusetts earlier this year. And what is so special about this project and the work that's come through Mayor Walsh and others is you have private sector businesses leading the way. Mm-hmm. So you have companies wanting to understand what are the wage gaps in their company. They want new tools to tackle them. They're creating a community where both evidence-based research from my center and others is shared, and they're sharing best practice. So instead of talking about what the gaps are, we're figuring out how to solve them.
So, Megan, let me ask, actually, I'd like to ask you both. I'll start with you, Megan. But just in terms of what can be done, Victoria made reference to a pay equity legislation on Beacon Hill. Mm-hmm. I know there at City Hall, you provide workshops, salary negotiation workshops for women. What else needs to happen to close this wage gap?
Sure. You know, this is a very complex problem, and you need many different solutions to solve it. It's not a one-size-fits-all. And so, we do a variety of things. The mayor has taken a multi-pronged approach to this work. We are the only city in the country to be doing so. We're big supporters of the legislation, and we know that that is going to have a significant role here. We do provide free salary negotiation workshops for working women in the city of Boston. But we have to also talk to employers. And this is about going beyond legislation and beyond policy. This is about how are we actually experiencing the day-to-day in the workplace for women, and what are women doing, to negotiate their salaries and to talk about their salaries in the workplace.
Yeah. So talking to employers, Victoria, I want to ask you, I mean, obviously from a moral standpoint, it would seem to make sense to close the gender wage gap, but can we make an argument to businesses that it's good business to close the gender wage gap?
Absolutely. And what's terrific about the work of the Women's Workforce Council, and people can find this online in the reports, is it's very clear that if you can hire, retain, and promote the best talent, your companies are going to be more successful. And our economy here in Massachusetts, and particularly in Greater Boston, will be more successful. Right now, we're in a period of incredibly low unemployment, and companies have to work hard both to get talent and to retain that talent. Once you've invested an employee, once you've hired someone on board, if you can't retain that person and promote them, then you're literally leaving money on the table, and further, you have to spend additional money to hire. Mm. What we find is the larger the business, or the larger, in the case of our work, the government, what you find is they want this information on how it is to make sure that they're paying people fairly and that people know it.
Mm. Yeah, go ahead, Megan.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, every company is different. Everybody has, their own unique problem or challenge. For some folks, it's about actually fixing dollars and cents and raising salaries. For others, it's about attracting women in the workforce. For others, it's about, promoting women in the workforce. And so you can't just have one solution. And that's why the work and the report that we put out today is so important, because it's business-led. It's business saying, this is the challenge that we have before us, and these are some of the things that we are doing to solve this problem.
Megan, does this study tell us anything about why this gap persists? I mean, I think the easy assumption to make is discrimination, that companies, for whatever reason, pay men more for reasons that aren't sound. But might it also have to do with the fact that, I don't know, in some companies there are more men who have more seniority, for example? I'm just asking that. I don't know.
Yeah, and I know Victoria can definitely speak to this as well, but, like I said, the wage gap is complex. It exists for a variety of reasons. We'd like to think that for most of the time it's not intentional, but there's certainly cases of being intentional about it. And a lot of this, I think, has to do with, again, the culture shift that needs to happen. This is not just about writing beautiful pieces of legislation that are certainly important and helpful, but this is about what is the actual culture change that we're having in our workplace. If you have flexible schedules in your HR handbooks, and if you have paid parental leave and all those great things in handbooks, that's awesome. But if nobody in your company is actually taking advantage because the culture doesn't call for that, that's the problem that we're trying to address.
Yeah, Victoria, same question to you.
Sure. So the wage gap is built over time. There's what takes place specifically in the company, but what we also know is when women both choose and are guided into college majors, which are not in science, technology, engineering, and math, and are focused on English literature or others, then you're segmenting even during the educational years in terms of whether women are going to have high or low wages. Then that continues on, and that women are usually underpaid within their first job. Until recently, we had a situation where most employers were going to peg that salary throughout the career to the prior salaries, and you would get a snowball effect. In addition, because we don't have transparency in wages in most organizations, women wouldn't know what other people are making. Mm-hmm. Women are more likely to be talking with friends who are also female about what they're making in the same field. So people may not be negotiating as significantly. And unfortunately, we also have implicit bias, where people tend to underpay women's contribution. And we've got to solve all of those different pieces. you know, the research shows very definitively there's a real penalty for mothers. And so when women become mothers, they often have wages depressed after that. Men actually often get a bump because they're viewed as breadwinners. So we need to tackle all of these pieces. And what's so exciting about the work being done here in Boston is you have the whole community working on it. You have the Chamber of Commerce, you have the mayor's office, you have the legislature, you have major employers, you have women in the community literally coming out as individuals to go to these trainings. And we're going to be ahead of the game because we both have more inputs into how to solve it. And now we have a tool to measure the progress of that.
Megan, let me ask you, because the report also breaks down the gender wage gap by job category. Mm-hmm. What do those numbers tell us? Dive into those a little bit about the individual kinds of jobs and where and what kind of wage gap is displayed in those different kinds of jobs.
Sure. So this talks a lot about both the actual dollars and cents that women are getting paid compared to their male colleagues and also where women are in organizations. Our sample size, as I mentioned a little earlier, is a little bit greater when it comes to the number of women we have represented. But the job categories broken down will show you where, you know, the wage gaps are in different levels. So for example, at, you know, a mid-level, there might be a different number than at the executive level or at the admin level. And so understanding not only the general wage gap and the overall aggregate number is important, but also understanding where those gaps are at different levels of employment is really important.
Right. So were there, for example, different levels of employment that showed that women actually do better than men?
Absolutely. You know, in a couple of our samples, we saw that at the mid-level, women are making just over a dollar compared to their male colleagues in our sample, and also admin support workers as well. And so, you know, we have to ask ourselves, why does that happen? Hmm. And there could be a variety of reasons for that. We know that there are a lot of women at those different levels. But, you know, we also know that at the sales worker level and the laborers and helpers level, women are at 61 cents or 65 cents. So there's a significant gap that exists there.
Interesting. So as they move up, Victoria, it sounds like as they sort of move up in seniority, the wage gap would increase, it sounds like Megan's suggesting.
Well, that's right. A couple of things happen. One, we know that women aren't promoted with the same frequency as men, even when they have the same skill sets, years of experience, and track record. So we have a gap in promotion. Then further, when they are promoted, then we still have a gap in compensation. And we often talk about wages, but compensation goes beyond that. And this report, as you mentioned in the introduction, also focused on how you see real gaps in bonus pay, for example. But if you look across, there's many gaps that need to be solved, including that promotion gap and then the overall compensation.
Well, fascinating study and great insight from Victoria Budson. She's the founder and executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Victoria, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony.
And for Megan Costello, executive director for Women's Advancement at the City of Boston. Megan Costello, many thanks to you as well. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. We're going to check in with Boston Globe tech columnist Hiawatha Bray from Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas about all the new gadgets that are making a splash out there. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.